This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Our brain filters out the unimportant. Unfortunately, the unimportant sometimes is meaningful, but we have associated it as unimportant, like helping people with anger, for example. The brain is filtering out the things I could be doing to not make my spouse angry because I don't think they're the important things. I think it's all her fault.
Welcome to Shift Talking, a podcast where we explore the art and science of behavior change. I'm your host, Davina Hain, a mental health coach and founder of A Steady Space. Join me as we discuss actionable tips, inspiring stories, and expert insights to help you create lasting change once and for all. Now, let's get to the Shift Talking. Hi, 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 and welcome back to Shift Talking. Today we have part two of my conversation with Carl Dietz. He's here to share with us what Nubellum is putting together with this app that is meant to almost kind of microdose our healing day to day with 1 to 2 minute exercises. If you missed part one, I do strongly suggest that you go back to listen. Otherwise, today's might kind of lose some context. I also want to send another reminder that the audio was compiled from 3 separate conversations that we had. And so there might be some funkiness in the audio, so please forgive it. And without further ado, let's get back to Carl.
So the goal is really in healing to do the same thing, to move from unconsciously unwell to consciously unwell to consciously well, and then unconsciously well. And it's sort of a nice path to take. So what we decided worked best, the best ever to generate the brain's healing response, aka placebo response, was the shallow waters of healing, like just taking a pill and not even knowing what's in it. You know, it's a blank pill, by the way, but just doing that, just that action, just taking a short walk, and you know the walk is supposed to be good for you. But if you don't take it, it's okay. So there's no pressure. There's no failure. There's just, I'm trying this. So when you're in the light waters, the shallow waters of healing, where it's no big commitment, there's no big outcome that you have to get, there's no big price you have to pay, all the anxiety's disappearing. And then we're saying, let's just see what works for you. We're going to give you 200 things, one a day, as for many days as you want. You could try them, and within a minute or two, you'll realize, that's not for me. Or maybe it's for me. I'm going to save it and try it again. Oh, that one I liked. Oh, I like that. Save that in my library. I like that. We're talking about behavioral exercises, physical exercises, emotional exercises, and they're all in the categories of physical, mindful, or emotional. And they're really easy to do. And some of them have an overlap. For example, if you're physically walking with an exercise we call rainbow walking, and the goal of the rainbow walk is simply to find something red, find something yellow, find something green, find something blue, and you're done. You don't have to walk 20 minutes. You don't have to walk 10,000 steps. You don't have to do anything but reach those 5 little mini goals, and you're done. And people do it and love it because they can have a little fun while they're doing it. And as soon as you find something red, your brain drops a little dopamine saying you hit a milestone you were trying for. Your conscious mind influencing your physical brain. Then you hit something yellow. It's like, oh my God, I'm halfway there. Oh, and then you're hitting these little milestones. So people love it. Now, is it a physical activity or is it a mindful activity? It's both. It's walking, but it's not trying to hit a certain calorie burn. It's not trying to reach 10,000 steps the cardiologist told you to go for. It's a physical walking without thinking about the walking. Instead, you're thinking about the goals you have, the little goals. And really, there's nothing wrong with finding a yellow flower. It's kind of a joyful moment for the human brain. You know, so it's not like I'm going to pick up trash, find some yellow trash, some red trash. You know, oh my God, that's work. So all of our little healing behaviors are fun to do. And if they're not fun for you, you just move along to the next one. And that one's fun for you, keep it in your library. So we stay in the shallow waters of healing, and we give people enough things that they can do that, let's say if I'm nervous about talking to my boss today, I could flip through and I go, I'm going to do the box breathing. I always like that. It calms me down. And you're gaining confidence because you've used it before, and you're like, okay, I'm ready for my boss, something like that. So that's where we're at. We love the shallow waters of healing. The shallow waters cause the brain's healing response nearly immediately. You know, just like if you take a blank pill, but you start feeling good right away. It hasn't even reached my stomach.
Yeah.
So lots of people swear by melatonin and does have the physical effect we're talking about. Melatonin does have the physical effect, the purpose in the body, it's to slow down, put you to sleep. But then why is it when I take the melatonin, I fall asleep in 5 minutes, but it takes the melatonin 30 minutes to get into my blood and start working?
Right.
Because it's also a placebo. It's not just a hormone. It's also a thing that I understand that gives me permission to fall asleep. So there can be a combo package, you know. So we stay in the light waters, the shallow waters, because there's no pressure to do anything right or wrong. You just find out what works for you, and you just do it again and again. If it doesn't work for you, take it out of the library. I'm going to find another one of New Bellum's 200 wellness activities you could do in a minute or two.
And even in my brain, I was like, okay, well.
It's exciting, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it really does. And that's why I'm making all these faces, because it seems like such a simple solution, which is oftentimes what it is that we need, right? And then what in my brain, I was like, okay, well, what's the downside? You take 60 seconds and people could say, okay, well, that part is a waste of time. But the way that I view it is, well, no, you figured out something that doesn't work for you.
Right.
And so it's not really a waste of time.
Even take 60 seconds to find out what doesn't work for you, because it could be the way our video is structured. It could be the voice that we deliver it with. It could be anything. But if you don't like it, you just swipe it and it's gone. So, you know, if it's worked, it's going to work for you. You probably are excited to make it through the whole minute or two. I mean, seriously, a minute or two, like you're just saying, how long is a minute or two? But you won't even try to make it through a minute or two until you actually feel like, hey, this is kind of cool. You know, and the funny thing about the brain is that we don't recognize as humans that what our brain's doing mostly when we're awake is filtering out experiences, getting rid of them before we're even conscious of them. Like, have you been conscious of the curtain behind you while we're talking? No. The curtain's already ingrained in your brain. Your brain knows the curtain. The curtain's not going to harm you, first of all. The curtain's not going to fall down on you. If it was in danger of falling down on you, your brain would be going, check the curtain, check the curtain, check the curtain. But our brain filters out the unimportant. Unfortunately, the unimportant sometimes is meaningful, but we have associated it as unimportant. And this is like in your work, if you're talking about like helping people with anger, for example. The brain is filtering out the things I could be doing to not make my spouse angry, because I don't think they're the important things. I think it's all her fault. And so I filtered out my own behavior as I'm behaving. And one of the roles that you often probably play is to get people to spark a little bit of mindfulness just before they do the dirty deed to get someone mad at them, you know. So while our brain's filtering out all these experiences, it's saving a tremendous amount of energy. If it was seeing and processing fresh everything all the time, your brain would be running so hot you'd have to go take a nap right now.
Yeah.
So why is that important? Because if I give you something you've never tried before, it's so novel and quirky that, like, I've never heard of that before. Your brain is ready to see what it's like. It's ready to experience it. But if I've already decided meditation's not for me, the first time I see a little meditation activity, you're going to, get rid of that one. And that's good, because your brain's not wired to even accept it. But like the rainbow walk, I've never met anyone who, once they understood what a rainbow walk was, number one, they've never done it. Number two, that makes sense. Number three, I want to try. And then when they do it and their brain stops dropping dopamine, they're like, oh, I love it.
So yes.
You see, so quirky novel behavior is really special for the brain. It's like candy for the brain.
Yes.
And that's why having 200 of them that you can just wait until the next one comes. Wonder what tomorrow's is. It's the way to go.
This is really the way to go.
Get your brain alert for healing.
This is so cool. And so,
yeah. What
is it?
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQBar plant protein bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQBars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
So we download this app, and then each day we're given an option to go through it? Like how many do we go through until we find one that fits?
Yeah, as soon as you start the app, one's presented. You start the app, you're watching a video. It's just like TikTok.
Okay.
And then you're watching it and you're like, yeah, I want to watch it. Or no, I don't. And you get rid of it. And then you could just go watch a different one. So it's just all about experiencing various ways to feel better in very small, tiny commitments. And we're not like some psychologists are saying, well, if I could just get you to create tiny habits, for example, a guy from Stanford has a really good program on tiny habits, then the tiny habits will stick better than trying for a big habit. The only problem with trying to do something that you're not sure is going to work, it's no fun. And then the no fun, trying to create a tiny habit, can be irritating and then cause you to not even want to get better. I mean, it's a crazy thing. Imagine every time you get out of bed, you're going to, okay, put both feet on the floor. Put the hands down. Okay, I'm already bored. When I get out of bed, I don't want to do anything other than just, in my case, go to the bathroom or something. So,
now that you got that,
take 3 breaths, Davina, and say, it's going to be a great day. Okay, that might work for some people, but it sounds like a lot of work for me because I already tell myself it's going to be a great day. I don't need to put my feet on the floor, and I don't need that tiny habit. So it's not going to work for me. But other people, they want to have that experience of, I did my tiny habit. You know, so everyone's different. Back to that. Everyone is different, and you just need to find out what works for you.
Well,
yeah.
I love this.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Yeah.
It's really, I've been trying to do that with my clients too, just because I also have challenges. It's a failure to launch often, right? And whether it's ADHD or whatever it is, there is that part of me that in my planning phase, when my brain is getting a dopamine dump of the planning phase, I'm loving the idea. And then when it's time to execute, I'm just like, fuck this. I don't want to do this. This sounds awful. And then when I don't do it, I feel even worse about myself. And then I lose confidence in myself that I'm able to actually do this and go through the behavior change. And this is, of course, something that my clients experience day in, day out, and myself included. So then what I've started doing with my clients is suggesting getting 30 seconds of sunlight first thing in the morning, or not looking at your phone within the first hour. And these kinds of like micro droplets of goodness that I think could get them moving forward without feeling like they're trying really hard. And what I love about what you guys are doing is the vast majority of us are waking up, looking straight at our phones, getting that screen immediately, and likely doom scrolling or looking at the news or checking our emails or, you know, whatever that is. And the idea of replacing this with something that might actually get us off to a good start is exciting for me.
Yeah,
that sounds
exactly.
like something that, yeah. like, yeah, I want to do that. If I knew that I could look at my phone each day, and the goal is to get a little bit of a feel good moment. Like, why not?
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And let me share with you where it leads. So you find that thing that works for you. Like, let's say 3 out of 10 people you ever say do 30 seconds of sunlight, 3 out of 10 actually like it. Okay, now we've got 3 out of 10 people saying, yeah, that really works for me. Now here's where the goal really comes in. If you can maintain that enjoyment, not the discipline of it, the enjoyment of doing it. Yeah, there is discipline to have to do it, but I enjoy the feeling of the sun on your face. You remember when I was a surfer on the beach and I did that. You know, you're enjoying it.
Yeah.
You can create a ritual. Like, I'm going to do it because I like it. This is where we see the healing, really. When you start finding things that work for you, you turn them into rituals that continue to work for you. In other words, you still like it. Now that ritual slowly, without you even trying, becomes a habit. That's where that conscious incompetence turns into unconscious competence, where it's just a habit you're doing. Then the habit starts to have a life of its own because it's a wellness habit. And you start thinking, yeah, there's probably other lifestyle changes I could make. Maybe I'll give up candy bars. And so you're getting some confidence that you can feel better by taking some actions. And those little rituals that turn into habits eventually become lifestyle changes that cause you to believe in lifestyle changes. So you look back and you go, you know, I just started by taking some sunshine every day. Before I knew it, I was taking a little walk in the sunshine. And before I knew it, I liked walking. And then your lifestyle includes walking. So this is the goal, is really to progress from the shallow waters of feeling better to sort of like a ritual of feeling better, and turns into a habit you don't have to think about. And very quickly, you're changing your lifestyle. So like you mentioned, all the weight you dropped, it could have nothing to do with that protocol. It could have to do with the success and the feeling of success you had, and you decided that you weren't as hungry, you know, anxiety hungry. There is a great study of nurses that illustrates this. They put a bunch of nurses in Oregon into a mindfulness training, and they did a funny trick on the nurses. Now, most nurses in big hospitals gain a little weight because they're not that active, and you just look across the hospitals, there's not as many skinny nurses as there are skinny cocktail waitresses. So their job doesn't depend on them being perfect weight. So they went and looked at all the nurses that took the mindfulness training, and they noticed that they were losing weight. There wasn't a weight loss program. It was a mindfulness training. And what happened during the mindfulness training is they started telling nurses things about their job they might not realize. Like, did you know that an average nurse walks 4 times more than an average person in the construction site? Did you know that nurses themselves burn more calories during the day? And they gave them all of these facts that just sort of like, wow, it's not so bad to be a nurse. There's a lot of benefits to be a nurse. And their self-esteem went up, and they lost more weight, and it wasn't even a weight loss program. So this is an example of how quirky little behaviors that turn into rituals, turn into habits, and turn into lifestyle changes can affect all other areas of our lifestyle.
Yeah, it sounds like it's almost kind of removing that negative filter that we can have a lot of the time, those like mental filters of this whole kind of challenge that I shared with you last time that I give to my clients of figure out what the best part of your day is going to be today, and or the kindest thing that you can do for a stranger, the kindest thing that a stranger does for you. And then we're looking for the good. We're looking for the person who holds the door for me instead of the person that cuts me off in the line. And maybe when the person cuts me off, it won't hit as hard because I did actually give life to the person who did that gesture and held the door open for me. So we're just trying to open up more of this. And what I'm hearing from you overall is that if we can start with having more positive experiences, no matter what it is, even when it's on my phone. Sometimes I dread grabbing my phone because I don't know what's going to be on the other end of that. And the idea that this could be something that makes me feel more positive about looking at my phone feels like there's more solutions than problems behind it. That's yes, please.
Yeah, exactly. And I just had a thought when you were sharing that with me that what we found in our research was that there are some wellness activities. Like, imagine I have 200 of them. There are some that are far more effective for more people than others. And one of them are things that are positive and social. So we are so wired socially in our human brains in ways that reptiles are not, in ways that mammals are and primates are. And if you're doing something like an act of kindness to a stranger and you really loved it versus maybe you got a lot of anxiety giving that guy some money, you know, if you really love it and you're being social and you get in a good conversation with them, that is almost a guarantee hit that you really would love to keep doing it. So the social activities are far stronger at generating the placebo response, the healing response, and generating better little rituals that turn into better habits. And then pretty soon you're someone volunteering at the food bank, you know? Social activities come really high up in terms of effectiveness. Yeah.
Is there going to be a social component to this app at any point, do you think?
I would love to do everything to make mankind well, but
yes,
there's almost
please.
So much anyone can do, really? I mean,
yes.
Seriously, so we'll have all of our members of the app tell us what's most important for them, what they need more, and maybe there's little communities of practice where doctors chime in and tell you the medical reason that's better, and psychologists come in, and
yeah.
You know, it could all evolve into that.
Yeah.
In version one, it's just about getting the goods in the hands of people. You know, 200
yes.
ways to try something that makes you feel better, all of them positive, all of them non-pharmacologic, and all of them guaranteed to help someone feel better, whoever resonates with that activity.
Yeah. I could do this with my kids, right?
Yes,
I'm like, hey,
absolutely.
Which one do you guys like? Which one do you like? Let's go for a rainbow walk. Let's try these things together that then gives us that social component, that gives us that togetherness, that gives us that time away from our phones after we learn what works for us. And it sounds like there's quite literally no downside
right,
to it.
Exactly.
This
and,
is super
it's
exciting.
Funny the funny that you used rainbow walking as an example with your kids, because it actually came out of elementary schools. When teachers would release the kids to the recess, right? Like
yeah.
it's recess, bang. The kids would run out like crazy and la, 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 and all excited and feeding on each other's excitement. But when they found that they would, on the beginning of recess, say, now we're all going to go out and do a rainbow walk before recess and just spend 5 minutes, find something yellow, find something red, and then you're free to play ball. That really made the difference in how mindful they were when they started the activity of playing ball. They had to be mindful to find the yellow, the red, the green. And so the psychologists started seeing the effectiveness of that at getting people to really be more mindful. And they go, try it with my patients. And they found that the patients loved it. So it really came from the kids and the elementary school teachers who invented it.
I love that. That's how I saw this hack of like help getting your kids to clean up their toys isn't just like, okay, massive cleanup. It's what color blocks do you want to pick up? What color Legos do you want to pick up? And then we each choose a color or a shape. And then we just go hunting
right.
for those
so
in particular.
It's a game to clean up.
Yes.
Yeah. So important. I mean, there's that classic story that Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer, he wants to get Huckleberry to paint the fence. He was told he had to paint the fence. And he gives them a whole story about, I'm not going to let you paint the fence. This is my job. I have so much fun painting the fence. And he talks his brain into thinking, if only I could paint the fence, I'd be better off. And so Tom Sawyer's just laying back, watching him, manipulated him into wanting to paint the fence. So that he
and then
didn't
it's a win-win.
Maybe the guy who paints the fence is the real winner, because even though he's tricked into painting it, he got the activity of painting a fence instead of the laziness of thinking he manipulated his friend.
Exactly. And like that sense of accomplishment and the dopamine dump from that. So this is not in replacement of, you're not advocating for this to replace anything that's happening modern medicine wise now.
Not at all, because there's a lot of validity to the modern world. The only problem is it comes with a lot of mythological beliefs that are not necessary. So, for example, if you're going to have talk therapy, I think it would be a lot more effective to reach the end point of whatever your talk therapy is if you did these kind of wellness behaviors. So, in other words, it augments whatever you're doing. There's just nothing wrong with feeling a little happy for a moment. You know, there's no harm done. But it's not a medical treatment at all. It's nothing like that. It's just a way for you to grab your agency, your ability to make a decision and do something you know could help you.
Well, and I think it's so good just because, of course, I'm a big proponent. I'm always going to talk about meditation, breath work, these types of things. Then I share the benefits that those things have on the body. And then those things take time. And so my whole thing is, let's do this while you're already taking the time. So each time I'm like, all right, well, I know you take your phone with you when you go in the morning to poop. While you're doing that, instead of scrolling TikTok or, you know, doing anything that's going to harm you, open up this app and do a breathwork exercise with me, or write down three things that you're grateful for. You know, that's what I'm hearing from you, is that you're just incorporating this into what you're already doing. You're not having to habit stack these things ahead of getting the benefit of it.
And I'll say this about breath work, because you're really bringing up the point that there's a journey and a wellness journey of doing breath work better and better. It's kind of like yoga. You could start with a half lotus. You could get to a full lotus. I mean, there's a progression there. But I want to introduce the notion that breath work in particular can give you a fabulous benefit in just the first 5 or 6 breaths. So just 5 or 6 mindful breaths, whichever style you pick, if you do those whenever you feel like, hey, I should just do some breathing. I just, you know, like you hear people all over town going, take a deep breath. You know, what they're really doing is they're kind of condescending you, acting like you're out of control in some little way. But there is a really good metabolic read that by consciously taking control of your breath for 4, 5, 6, 7 breaths, doesn't matter, you're going to get most of the benefit you can get for 10 minutes. You're going to have to be really good at it for 20 minutes before you're going to get the other 20% of the benefits. So, you know, learning the school or the art of breath work is a way to fine tune what it'll already do, is just do it for a couple breaths. I often find that just by becoming conscious of what is diaphragmatic breathing right now in my body, what is deep breathing? What is it, Carl? Mm-hmm. And just doing it and feeling my stomach go out instead of stay flat while I breathe. That knowledge of how good it is for me will give me the effect I need just after 1 or 2 breaths. Because I already have the psychological education to know it's a physical benefit immediately. And then the placebo response kicks in. The brain's healing response goes, you know it's good for you and you just did it. Wow, good job.
I typically give the advice that we need to stop giving the rules of the game and explain to people why we're playing.
Right, exactly. That's a really good way to say it.
It's okay, take a deep breath.
Yeah.
When I've tried that with my kids, they hold their breath. They're just like, fuck off. I don't want to do this. I don't want to listen to what you have to say.
That's really not bad, because they're halfway there. And eventually they have to submit to the other half.
Exactly. At some point, you can only hold your breath for so long. The other part is I've kind of transitioned it into, we need to calm your heart. When your heart's racing, we can't really think. When you're sweating, you can't really focus. And so we kind of do that kind of part of, instead of take a deep breath and when you're ready, we'll talk, it's hold on though. Because you feel your heart, feel how quickly that's racing. It's not good for your body, babe. Let's calm down your heart first. And then I want to hear what your experience was like.
Yeah, that's really good, Mom.
Versus just take, and even the anger management, typical thing is, okay, take a deep breath, count back from 10, walk it off, walk away, these types of things. But that's why I'm just endlessly intrigued by everything that you're sharing, because it's so scientific. And a lot of these other things people think are just throwaway advice, because they're just giving them what to do instead of why we're doing it. Exactly. I focus on the neurochemistry of anger to show them about the amygdala hijack. And it's not up to you whether you calm down. You don't have the choice anymore. You're incapable. And here's why. And so here's how we can work in prevention of that. And I think if it sounds like this is one of the first models that I've heard of that allows for us to focus on the objective rather than just the rules. And if I understand why I'm playing, I can make my own moves. I can strategize on my own, build that agency, like you mentioned, and feel like I can actually achieve these things.
I agree with what you said so strongly that I will say this, that you have just described the difference between the shallow waters of healing and the deep waters. The deep waters require rules, protocols, adherence. They require you to commit mentally and use energy to keep at it. The shallow waters are, how'd you like it? Was it good? Oh, that was good too. I liked it too. So the shallow waters is where you get the most benefit immediately. The deeper waters, through a lot of work, is where you get the most long-term benefit if you're lucky enough to pick the right treatment. If you're not lucky enough to pick the right treatment, you could be an anxiety-ridden depression pill taker your whole life and constantly blaming yourself that the pills don't work for you. It's a horrible situation. And I've seen it in friends and family who they're so frustrated that their psychiatrist can't find the right med. And considering how much of the brain's own healing response is in play here, it's sad that you can't find the right side effect to keep your placebo effect going. So, yeah, so maybe for those people, yeah, who can't resolve their depression, and most people can't, they should just try walking in the shallow waters a little bit.
Yeah, usually my first question is, do you want to? Like, I know that you want this person
it's
to
critical.
Fix you. Yeah. But are you open? Do you actually want to do the work to help yourself?
And really, you should be able to articulate and say, yes, I want to get better. Because if you can't do that, if you're even nervous about saying that, there's other things at work that we're going to have to solve. In other words, well, why don't you want to get better? I thought it was natural to want to get better. So that's where maybe some talk therapy comes in.
Yeah. And then I think there's just that part that everyone wants to feel like they're in power. Nobody wants to be told what to do. Nobody wants to follow the rules, myself included. These types of things come through. But then when we say that your mental health, so much of it is in your hands, you have the power to, you know, just modify any of these things, then it's like, no, no, no. Like, you just don't understand. And
right.
I'm just like, what the fuck? Like, where's the dissonance there?
And then the only problem is that we all know that too much positivity can feel toxic. You know,
yes.
Like I'm having a bad day and someone's trying to tell me to look on the bright side. I remember one time I was maybe 18, 19 and my girlfriend dumped me. And my brother says, my twin brother, who's supposed to know me and love me so well, he says, she was never right for you anyway. Oh my God, those were fighting words. Are you kidding me? That has nothing to do with him going through that. So, you know, he's trying to comfort me, right? He's trying to comfort me while I'm sad about being dumped. And here I am still talking about it. That's the weird part, that it was so traumatic to have him say that at that moment that I'm still talking about it.
But it's just so deeply unhelpful.
Yeah.
And that's what I kind of love about the experience and that you're still talking about it, because I'd imagine now when people going to comfort you or when you're going to comfort people, you're not going into the logic of it right away. You are holding space for the fact that they're grieving, whether it's righteous grieving or not.
Right.
It sounds like that's what you learned from that experience and it impacted you to that degree that now you can hold space for people.
Right. And sometimes it takes a lot of work to get to the sort of mindfulness that you can understand when other people are being harmful toward you.
Yes.
But too much positivity, it, just like anything else, can like rub people the wrong way. And that's why I think, let's say, Carl, I'm a half empty guy. I think the whole world's going to hell in a handbasket. Okay, that's great. But why don't you try one of these mindfulness activities? Why don't you try this? See what makes you a little happier. Because while the world's going to hell in a handbasket, maybe you could giggle. And by the way, laughter therapy, we have a lot of laughter therapy activities in this set of 200 initial ones. And they don't work for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, so it's for people who are ready for a giggle, laughter therapy is going to kick in. So back to everyone's different. We all heal differently. And what works for me might not work for me a week from now. And it might not work for you today. You know, so it's important to just try some things. Walk around in the shallow waters of healing and see what works for you.
Yeah, splash around a little.
Yeah, splash
like
around
it.
A little bit. Yeah.
I'm really excited.
I'm glad I got you excited.
I am trying to find really approachable, realistic things that, you know, people who are suffering from chronic anger or in, you know, rough marriages and they're just not getting along and they're unhappy, right? I'm just so limited in my sessions that now I'm going into group coaching because I believe strongly that we need community around us. And then that's also not going to be enough. And so I've been looking for something like this that could add in to their lives in a way that's productive and helpful and not asking for much. And that's really what I want is that the majority of the time people come in, it's just like, okay, well, what massive lifestyle am I going to have to take on? And you're just trying to change everything about me and, you know, all of these things. And this is just like little drips. And I love that.
Think that the reason something like this would help you in your coaching is because when someone finds some silly, quirky, novel activity that they like, it's a discussion that you can now enjoy about what did you like about it? What did you think? What did you use it? And they can start expanding their mind into, what is it I liked about it? And so it's sort of, let's call it a conversation starter for coaching? You know, like, hey, did you find any activities that worked for you? And
yeah.
back to the social aspect, which is what the group therapy can help so much with. If I can talk to you about the little silly healing behavior I liked, I'm on a whole new path of talking to you about other things. It's not the same path as, did you do your breathing I told you to do? No, it was something I decided I liked, and I bring
yes.
that to the conversation.
What I love about this is that it's basically the whole conceptualization of a recent attempt that I've been trying, which is that morning routine of like, here's six things you could do in the morning that will likely help you start off with like some relative like good experience in the morning. And then they're the ones deciding, okay, yeah, I did drink the glass of water, or I did look at the sunlight, or I did go outside and smell fresh air, or, you know, whatever this is. And you've already put it into a technology and innovated it in that way. And it's absolutely something that I want to incorporate in all of the coaching that I'm doing. I think it makes the most sense. It's the least invasive.
I've sold a wonderful coach on our product.
I'm really excited about it. I really do think that this is groundbreaking.
We have 10 or 12 people constantly looking for the research of what works for some people, what's been studied, why it works, classifying them into categories so that we can even go further and tell people you seem to respond more to emotional treatments rather than physical treatments. You respond more to mental things. Let's give you a few more of the mental things and really get to know in the app what you like most and give you more of those. So you have to do less swiping away and more collecting, you know?
Well, it's less of them having to dig into their own shit. You kind of get to like just tell them what they've already unsurfaced.
What works great for me today may be a completely different set of things 5 years from now. So it's just like our music preferences. Like sometimes go back to my favorite artists when I was a teenager and I'm like, oh, that's too much for me. I'd rather go over here. So your brain's always evolving. And what works for me 5 years ago maybe need to be refreshed.
Yeah. So. It's just feeling better quicker.
Yeah. And then it turns into rituals, habits, and lifestyle.
That's so good. I'm so happy that you've joined me. This was our Goldilocks episode. This
yeah,
was
this
it.
Worked really
exactly.
Well. Yeah, this is it.
Yeah, we found our groove.
You know, there's more heady discussions we could always have. Like we got into the deep waters of how vocabulary defines us.
Yes.
Oh my God. It's just, it's almost always hurtful for people to realize that the words they're using are keeping them from feeling good. We don't
yes.
have enough positive words. That's the problem.
No.
You know? If I say to someone, oh, I want to live my life with joy, everyone will mostly misunderstand what I just said.
Exactly. And like the six primary emotions, five of them are negative or distressing.
Yeah,
there's only
exactly.
one primary emotion that's like actually enjoyable. It's
exactly.
a rough go. And hey, who knows? In 50 years, there's going to be somebody doing something other than, I'm sure, the podcast in the same way that we're doing it right now, talking about Ubellum
yeah.
and how it did this.
I
and this
so.
Is what we found. And,
yeah.
you know, like it has to be, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
it's super cool.
It has
I'm
to
so
exist.
Excited for you.
A product like ours has to exist. We need an easy access in our hand to anything that might help us feel better. Even if we don't feel
yeah.
bad. Even
yeah.
if I don't feel bad, I still want to feel better, happier, mm-hmm. more accepting, whatever. Everyone's different.
Of course. Just add in more positive. It's that
yeah.
whole visual that every time I'm kind of like getting down on things, I think about that visual of the glass of water and then you pour a scoop of soil into it. And then based on typical mental health work and basically what we hear is like, okay, we go through and we start scooping it out. But in order to get the soil out, we have to take out some of the good, some of the water. And really, and then we lose those good parts of ourselves. And so then what we've determined is the only good way is to pour fresh water over it and allow for it to completely filter itself out. And I picture that in my brain often of, okay, I don't just need to remove the bad. From my thinking patterns, from my experience, I need to add in so much more good to flood it and filter it completely out. Where can people find you?
Just go to Ubellum.com and you can look us up. There will be links to our app when you get there in a month or so.
Amazing. Okay,
yeah.
Well, great. I'll link it in the show notes too. And then
yeah.
hopefully we'll have you back in 30
okay.
to 40 days
I would
to discuss
love
the launch.
Obviously, I would love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
I would too. All right, Carl. I'll speak to you soon.
I find what Ubellum is doing to be groundbreaking, innovative, transformative, and I hope you are as excited about the potential that this app has as I am. And also, just so you know, I am not at all affiliated with it. I got connected with Carl and we just immediately understood each other's language. Next episode, we are going into some parenting talk along with my parental shift program information. I cannot wait to share it with you. I hope you join me. Please remember, this is all about your empowerment, one shift at a time. Stay steady, and I will see you next time.